Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Once in a Blue Moon by Sharon Saleh, narrated by Amy Rubinate. Chapter 1. Streaks of moonlight slipped between the blinds in Kathy Terry's bedroom, painting silver-white stripes across the dark hardwood floor. The lights of a passing patrol car swept across the wall where she lay sleeping, but all she saw was the man coming at her in her dream. Blaine Wagner's face was twisted in rage, his fists doubled, ready to strike a blow.
"You're not going anywhere, damn it. Nobody walks out on me."
Kathy was scared of him, but she'd had enough, and the luxury of their lifestyle was no longer the draw it had once been.
"I'm not nobody. I am your wife, not one of your whores, and I've had enough. You have cheated on me for the last time. I've already contacted a lawyer, and I'll be staying in the Luxor here in Vegas until I can find an apartment."
"Like hell,"
Blaine roared and swung at her. Kathy ducked and ran, locking herself into their ensuite, and then called the police, crying and begging them to hurry as Blaine pounded on the door in continuing rage. The sirens and the flashing lights pulling up to the house gave her the reprieve she needed. The moment she heard him leave the room to answer the door, she flew out of the bathroom, grabbed the bag she'd already packed from the closet, and followed him down the stairs. He was already playing the part of the surprised spouse and telling the police it was all a misunderstanding when Kathy appeared. Her eyes were swollen from crying, and her fear was unmistakable.
"Help me! I've filed for divorce and he won't let me leave," she said.
She was trying to push past him when he grabbed her by the arm. In the dream, she was struggling to get free, just like she had that night. The police had come into their house at that point, yelling at Blaine to let her go, and he was screaming in her ear,
"I'll make you sorry. You'll never have another moment's peace as long as you live."
Her heart was pounding when she heard a voice from her childhood.
"Wake up. Wake up, Mary Kathleen. Wake up now."
She gasped, and then sat straight up in bed and turned on the lamp. The 100-watt bulb put a whole new light on the moment, helping pull her out of the dream, but she couldn't deny what she'd heard. That was her mother's voice, and it had been 2 years since she'd heard it.
"Oh, Mama, you're still on my side, even from the grave."
Kathy glanced at the clock. It was 4:20, and going back to sleep after that dream wasn't happening, so she turned on the television, plumped up her pillows, and began scanning the available movies. She didn't much care what she watched. Anything to get her mind off her ex would suffice. She was thinking about going to the kitchen for something to snack on when she saw actor Jeffrey Dean Morgan's face flash on the screen, and she stopped and upped the volume. He was one of her favorites, and being tall, dark, and handsome was the antithesis of Blaine Wagner's stocky build and blonde hair.
"That actor is one pretty man. I don't care what this movie is about. I can mute the whole thing and just sit and look at him. That should get my ex-husband's face out of my head."
But she didn't mute it after all, and wound up watching almost 2 hours of the movie. It wasn't a happy ever after movie, but she didn't live in a happy ever after world, and was fine with that. Kathy ran to the kitchen during a commercial and made herself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, then brought it and a glass of milk back to bed. By the time the movie was over, the memory of the dream had mostly passed, and morning was imminent. She turned off the television and took her dirty dishes back to the kitchen, started a pot of coffee, then headed back to her room to get dressed. A short while later, she was in the kitchen, contemplating her day of doing little to nothing here in Blessings, and remembering her old life in Vegas. The divorce had taken 6 months to finalize, ending with a lump sum payment of $30 million to her bank account. It wasn't like Blaine couldn't afford it. He was a billionaire, a fourth-generation Wagner, a name famous in Nevada. In early days, it was silver mines, and during the past 70-something years, casinos had become the family business. After the divorce was final, she'd thought that would be the end of it. But she'd been wrong, and it was what he did on the courthouse steps as they were leaving that scared her. When both lawyers walked off, Blaine stayed behind. Kathy thought it was for a final parting of the ways, until he grabbed her arm and whispered in her ear.
You do understand I now view you as a threat. You know things about me and my life that aren't healthy for you anymore.
Kathy tried to pull away. Don't be ridiculous.
This isn't a joke, Kathy. I'm just giving you fair warning. I don't trust you anymore, and I have no intention of spending the rest of my life looking over my shoulder and waiting for the feds to come knocking. Your days are numbered.
Kathy's heart skipped a beat. Oh my God, he's serious. I don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about. Our world consisted of your country club, our personal friends, and hosting dinner parties for your business associates now and then. His eyes narrowed.
Exactly.
I still don't get it, Kathy said, pretending total oblivion, although she was beginning to remember that some of those associates had dubious reputations, even though she knew nothing incriminating about any of them. Go away, Blaine. Just leave me alone. She twisted out of his grasp and walked away, resisting the urge to run. This was a shock. She'd never seen this coming, but she needed to disappear, and she was going to have to be smart about doing it. By the time she got home, she had a plan. The first thing she did was fill out papers online to change back to her maiden name. After 2 tense months of waiting, it was done, and that's when she amped up the plan. She was setting up a new life with a renewed driver's license, a new phone plan, and a new credit card. She knew Blaine was having her followed. She didn't know if that was just intimidation, but leaving town with his knowledge of where she was going wouldn't assure her safety. He'd just have her tailed to other places, and if he was still in the mindset to get rid of her, it would be all too easy to make her death look like an accident. But she already knew how to disappear. She'd spent the first 12 years of her life living off the grid in Alaska. The last thing Blaine Wagner would ever expect was for her to take the back roads of America on foot. Kathy ordered everything she needed online so her ex wouldn't know what she was buying, and thanks to him, every friend she'd ever had in Vegas had shut her out. No more lunch dates with girlfriends. No more girlfriends. So she holed up in her apartment and quit going anywhere, and when she got hungry, she ordered in. The last thing she did was disperse the money from her divorce settlement into 3 different banks across the country. And early one morning, she walked out the back door of her apartment, caught the Uber she'd called to take her to the bus station, and took a bus to Colorado. She got off in Colorado Springs and rented a motel room. She stayed long enough to buy a handgun and ammunition, and one morning, just after sunrise, she shouldered her hiking gear and left the motel, heading east. She hiked along highways, sidestepping cities for the more rural areas, and the weeks went by until she finally reached Springer Mountain, Georgia, the beginning of the Appalachian Trail. It was a place she recognized, true wilderness, and one in which she felt comfortable. She knew how to forage and how to fish from the rivers and streams teeming with fish. But the trail went north from there, and it was getting too close to winter to hike north, so she started hiking south. She made it all the way to a little out-of-the-way place called Blessings, Georgia, before something about it spoke to her, and there is where she stopped. And now here she was, in something of a holding pattern, not really participating in life, just hiding from it. Kathy set aside the memories, finished her morning coffee, and got ready to go for her morning run. It was mid-November, but it promised to be a nice day in the high 50s. She was wearing her running shoes, sweatpants, and a long-sleeved t-shirt as she pocketed her phone and left the house, pausing beneath the porch light to scan the area for signs of things that didn't belong. The streetlights were already fading with the growing light of a new day. The morning was still, the sky cloudless. She walked to the edge of the porch and waited for the car coming up the street to pass, and then waved when she recognized the boy who delivered the morning papers. He saw her and waved back. She still didn't know his name, but this town was friendly like that. She came off the porch, pausing in the driveway to stretch a few times, and then took off down the sidewalk at a jog, relishing the impact of foot to surface. The rhythm of her stride soon caught up with the thump of her heartbeat, By the time she was making her second pass by the city park, she'd been running for an hour. The fat raccoon scurrying through the green space was heading for the trees and the creek that ran through the park. On the other side of the street, a young woman came running out of her house toward the old car parked in the drive. Kathy recognized her as one of the waitresses from Granny's Country Kitchen. From the way she was moving, she was likely late for work. The thought of Granny's led Kathy to wanting some of the gravy and biscuits she'd had there before, but she couldn't go there all hot and sweaty, and was wishing she'd pulled her hair up in a ponytail before leaving the house. Even though the morning was cool, the weight of the curls was hot against the back of her neck. She turned toward Main Street as she reached the end of the block, thinking to make one last sweep through Blessings and then head home. Traffic was picking up on Main, and even though she'd been running every morning since her arrival, people still stared. No one jogged in Blessings, although she had seen some kids running at the high school track field, but she didn't care. She wasn't here to fit in. She wasn't planning to stay. She ran past the florist, and then the quirky little hair salon called the Curl Up and Dye, and was moving past Phillips Pharmacy as a huge black pickup pulled up to the curb. It had been months since she'd been behind the wheel of any kind of vehicle, and she was toying with the idea of leasing one for the winter. She didn't know she'd caught the driver's notice, and it wouldn't have mattered anyway. She just kept running without noticing how far she'd gone until she saw the gas station at the far end of town and the city limits sign just down the road. "Well, shoot," Kathy muttered. She made a quick turn on the sidewalk and was heading back into Blessings when she came down wrong on her foot. And before she knew it, her ankle rolled and she was falling. The pain was instantaneous and excruciating, and as she was reaching out to break her fall, she jammed her hand against the concrete and then landed on her side with a thud. "Oh, my Lord," she moaned, then slowly turned over onto her back, only vaguely aware of screeching brakes and then the sound of running feet. It was just after 8 o'clock a.m. when Duke Talbot drove into Blessings and pulled up to the curb in front of Phillips Pharmacy. He was reaching for the list he'd put in the console when he caught movement from the corner of his eye and looked up just as a young woman in a long-sleeved t-shirt and sweatpants ran past the store. She was gone before he got a good look at her face, but all that curly red hair bouncing down her back was impossible to miss. He couldn't remember seeing anyone jogging here before and was curious as to who might have taken it up. He didn't know any woman with hair that color either, but considering the Curl Up and Dye was just down the street, Ruby or one of the girls could be responsible for that. He watched the jogger until she turned a corner and disappeared before he got out. The bell over the door jingled as he entered the pharmacy. Lillian Dalton looked up from behind the register and smiled. "Good morning, Duke. You're out early," she said.
"Morning, Lillian. Just getting an early start on a long day."
He picked up a basket from the end of the counter and started down the aisle where the shampoo and conditioners were shelved, then stopped and turned around.
"Hey, Lillian, I just saw a red-headed woman with long, curly hair jogging past the store. I don't think I ever knew anyone to take up jogging here in Blessings. Who is she?"
"Oh, that's Kathy Terry. She's new here. She's living in one of Dan Amos's rental houses."
"What's she do?"
he asked.
Lillian shrugged. "I don't know. She comes in here now and again. Really nice lady, but she sort of keeps to herself."
Having his curiosity satisfied, Duke began picking up the items he'd come for. It didn't take long for him to get everything on the list, and then he was back in his truck. He stopped and used the ATM drive-thru at the bank for cash, and then realized he was still a little early for his haircut appointment, so he headed to the gas station to get his oil checked. He was thinking about the day ahead when he realized the redhead he'd seen earlier was on the sidewalk running toward him. He had a clear view of her face, and despite the pink flush on her cheeks, his first thought was how pretty she was. Then all of a sudden she was falling, and he groaned aloud at how hard she hit. He stomped the brakes, slammed the truck into park, and got out on the run. He was down on his knees beside her in seconds, and when he saw the blood on the palm of her hand, he knew that was going to burn later. Then he saw her ankle and was shocked by how much it was already swelling.
"Your ankle? Don't move, it might be broken," he said.
And then she looked up at him, and Duke took a deep breath. He'd never seen eyes that blue, and they were swimming in tears. It took everything he had not to sweep her up in his arms, but he was afraid to move her.
Did you hit your head?
She wasn't sure. Maybe. She'd just watched a movie with Jeffrey Dean Morgan in it, and now either she was hallucinating, or his doppelganger was leaning over her.
I don't think so. Just the right side of my body. My ankle turned, and I think I need a little help getting up.
My name is Duke Talbot. I saw you fall, and from the looks of your ankle, I think you need to go to the ER,
Duke said.
Will you let me take you, or would you rather go in an ambulance?
Kathy frowned. I don't think I...
One or the other,
Duke said. She sighed. Dictatorial male. Just what I don't need. But both her hip and her ankle were throbbing now, and he did have a sweet, concerned expression on his face. If it's not too much trouble, maybe you could just drop me off at the ER then.
Yes, ma'am,
Duke said, and then reached toward her hair. But when she flinched and then ducked, he frowned. Those were instinctive reactions someone might make from fear of being struck.
I'm sorry. You have a piece of grass and a curl. I didn't mean to startle you.
Kathy sighed. Then thank you, she said, and closed her eyes as Duke pulled it out. When she opened them again, he was on his feet, and she was in his arms, and he was carrying her toward his truck. At that moment, a police car pulled up, and Chief Pittman got out on the run.
Hey, Duke, we just had a call come in that someone fell. I see you beat me to her,
Lon said as he ran toward Duke's truck and opened the door.
I saw it happen,
Duke said as he eased Kathy down inside and then quickly reclined the seat back.
I'm taking her to the ER. I'll lead the way,
Lon said. He glanced in the truck as Duke was buckling her in and recognized who it was.
Miss Terry, I don't know if you remember me, but we were standing in line together at Crown Grocer's last week. I'm Lon Pittman, the police chief here in Blessings. My wife Mercy and Duke's sister-in-law Hope are sisters, which in the South means we're all kin. You sit tight and we'll get you to the ER in style.
Kathy nodded, then closed her eyes. But even after he'd shut her in, she could still hear them talking. A couple of minutes later, Duke got back in the truck, and as he made a U-turn in the street, she grabbed onto the console to steady herself.
Lon's just ahead of us, leading the way with his lights flashing. Just hang on for a few minutes more. Are you hurting very much?
He asked. Enough, and I really appreciate this, she added. Duke glanced down at her briefly. Again, their gazes locked, but this time she was the first to look away. He could tell he made her uncomfortable, so he turned his attention to driving. As soon as he pulled up at the ER, everything began happening at once. Two orderlies came running out so quickly that Duke guessed the chief must have radioed ahead that they were inbound. He jumped out as they were transferring Kathy from his truck to a gurney, and then walked beside her as they wheeled her inside.
Is there anyone I can call?
Duke asked. No, but I'm fine. And thank you again for all your help, Kathy said. Duke watched until they wheeled her out of sight, and then shoved his hands in his pockets. He was still standing in the middle of the hall when Hope came around a corner. When she saw him, she came running.
Duke, what are you doing here? Did something happen to Jack?
No, no, nothing like that, Duke said. I came in to get a haircut this morning. I was going to have my oil checked when I saw a woman take a bad fall. I just brought her in.
Oh no, who was it? Hope asked.
Her name is Kathy Terry.
Oh, Mercy mentioned her a time or two. She's renting from Dan Amos. Was she hurt bad?
I don't know. I felt bad leaving her here on her own, but when I offered to call someone for her, she shook me off. I think I make her nervous. Not me personally, but me being a man.
Hope was a little surprised by Duke's insight and concern. Most of the time, her brother-in-law was either critical or dismissive of just about everything and everybody.
I'm working in the ER today. I'll check on her, Hope said.
Okay. If she needs help, let me know,
he said, then left the ER. He got back in his truck and headed for the curl up and dye for his appointment. The last barber had left Blessings some years back, so it was either a haircut at the ladies' hair salon, a drive all the way to Savannah, or do it yourself. Duke had only tried DIY once when he was 12, and the results had been disastrous. But his thoughts were no longer on the day ahead of him. He was thinking of the little redhead he'd left all alone in the ER. Kathy was disgusted with herself, and at the same time a little anxious. Being self-reliant was fine when all your moving parts were working, but from the swelling on her ankle and the huge bruise already spreading on her hip, she wasn't going to be jogging for a while, and getting to the Crown for groceries wasn't going to be easy either. She didn't have one person in town she knew well enough to ask for help, and she was wishing she'd already leased a car. Kathy was watching Rhonda, the nurse who was cleaning the scrape on her hand, when another nurse walked in. She was tall, dark-haired, and looked vaguely familiar. "Hi, Rhonda, how is she doing?" Hope asked.
"We're waiting for Dr. Quick," Rhonda said.
Hope moved to the other side of the bed.
"Hi, Kathy, I'm Hope Talbot. Mercy Pittman, the fabulous baker at Granny's, is my sister, and it was my brother-in-law Duke who brought you here. Has someone been in yet to get your personal information?"
"No, not yet," Kathy said. But now she knew why the woman looked familiar. She looked like the woman she'd seen at Granny's.
"Then they will do that shortly. Is there anyone I can call?" Hope asked.
"No, but I have a question. Does Blessings have a taxi service?" Kathy asked.
"We don't have an official taxi service, but we have a whole lot of good people who would gladly give you a ride home. Do you live alone?"
Kathy nodded. Hope glanced down at Kathy's swollen ankle.
"You won't be driving for a while."
"I don't have a car here," she said.
"Ah, came in on the bus, did you?"
Hope said. "No, I had been backpacking for several months when I got to Blessings. I decided it was time to find a place to spend the winter." Hope's eyes widened.
"Wow, go you. As for getting home, that's no problem. We'll get you all sorted out. All it will take is one phone call. Have you met Ruby yet?"
Hope asked. "No, who's Ruby?" Kathy asked.
"Ruby Butterman. She owns the Curl Up and Die. She's the go-to person in Blessings when someone is in need. Her husband, Peanut, is the local lawyer."
"Her husband's name is Peanut Butterman? For real?" Kathy asked. Hope giggled.
"Yes, he always says his parents were smoking weed when they named him."
Kathy grinned and then winced when Rhonda poured some antiseptic on the palm of her hand.
"I'll go make a couple of phone calls," Hope said. "I'll be back later to check on you. Don't worry, we'll get you home."
Once again, Kathy was struck by how friendly people were here. And as Hope had predicted, a couple of minutes later, a man came in and got her personal information. And as he was leaving, the ER doctor arrived. Rhonda looked up.
"Good morning, Dr. Quick. This is Kathy Terry."
He smiled.
"Morning, Rhonda,"
he said. And then he shifted focus to his patient.
"Hello, Kathy. I'm Dr. Quick. What have you done to yourself?"
he asked, as he began eyeing the bruising and the swollen ankle. "I turned my ankle and fell while I was jogging." Dr. Quick was already feeling her ankle.
"Can you move it?"
he asked. "Yes, it hurts, but I can move it," she said, and proceeded to show him. "Fell pretty hard on my right side. My shoulder and hip are beginning to hurt, too."
"Did you hit your head?"
he asked, glancing at her thick red curls.
"No."
Dr. Quick nodded.
"Okay, I'm sending you down for x-rays. We'll know more after I see them. Just bear with us."
A couple of minutes later, an orderly arrived with a wheelchair, and all the way down the hall, Kathy kept thinking, "Nightmare or not, I wish I'd gone back to bed."
Chapter 2.
As soon as Hope was between patients, she made a call to Ruby at the Curl Up and Die. The phone rang a couple of times before the call was picked up.
"Curl Up and Die, this is Mabel Jean."
"Hi, Mabel Jean, this is Hope Talbot. I need to speak to Ruby if she's free."
"Sure, hang on a sec while I put you on hold."
Then she called out from the front of the shop, "Ruby, it's for you." Ruby gave Duke a quick pat on the shoulder.
"Give me a second," she said, and picked up the call from her workstation. "This is Ruby."
"Hi, Ruby, this is Hope. Sorry to bother you at work, but there's a patient here in the ER who's going to need a ride home in a while, and I wondered if you knew someone I could contact. She asked if there was a taxi service in town, and I told her no, but that I'd try to find her a ride."
"Oh my gosh, of course. I'm certain I can find someone. Who's the patient?"
"Kathy Terry, the cute redhead who's renting from Dan Amos?"
"Oh, I know who you're talking about. I see her jogging past the shop all the time. In fact, I just saw her running past this morning. What happened to her?"
She took a bad fall while she was running, turned her ankle and skinned herself up a bit. I don't think anything is broken, but we're waiting for Dr. Quick to make that determination.
Well, bless her heart, Ruby said. Don't worry. Just tell her someone will be there in the waiting room for her when she's ready to be released.
I sure will, Hope said, and thank you so much.
Of course, Ruby said, and then hung up.
Vera and Vesta Conklin, the two other stylists, had eavesdropped on the call.
What's wrong? Vera asked.
Vesta frowned.
Sister, you don't have to know everything.
Ruby grinned.
That was Hope Talbot. I need to find someone to ride home from the ER.
Duke's heart skipped a beat.
Is he for Kathy Terry?
He asked. Ruby's eyes widened.
Why, yes, it is. Do you know her?
Not really, but I'm the one who took her to the ER. I saw her fall. I offered to stay, but she said there was no need, and obviously she now has a need. I'll do it. I didn't like leaving her like that anyway. Felt like I was leaving a job half done.
This is great, Ruby said, and I'm almost finished with your cut, so the timing is perfect.
Duke parked near the ER entrance and jumped out, then hurried inside. He didn't know when Kathy would be ready to leave, but he didn't want her to be somewhere waiting, so he went straight to the front desk.
Hey, Carol Ann, I'm here to give Kathy Terry a ride home when she's ready to leave. Can you let somebody know?
Absolutely, she said.
Duke chose a seat that would give him a clear view of the hall. He didn't know how Kathy was going to take his reappearance, so being quiet and cordial might be his best bet. He was fine with cordial, but as Hope and Jack were fond of telling him, being quiet wasn't one of his better traits. He had a tendency to talk before he thought about what was coming out of his mouth, and he blamed it on having no one to answer to but himself. While he was waiting, Dan Amos came in with a bloody rag wrapped around his left hand. Duke heard him say he might be needing stitches, and then they rushed him back into the exam area. A few minutes later, Dan's wife Alice came running inside.
What exam room is Dan in? He's here somewhere getting stitches.
He's in 3A, Carol Ann said.
Thank you, Alice said, and went through the double doors into the ER on the run.
Duke continued to wait, thinking to himself how fast someone's life could change, and remembering the day that drunk driver hit Hope head-on as she was coming into work. If it hadn't been for her long-lost sister's appearance on that day to donate blood, Hope would have died. He glanced up at the clock. It had been over 2 hours since he dropped Kathy off here. He was beginning to worry that she might be seriously hurt when the doors suddenly swung open and an orderly appeared, pushing Kathy out in a wheelchair. Duke stood up and smiled.
We meet again. I happened to be getting a haircut when the call came in about you needing a ride home, and since I brought you here, I thought it would be okay with you if I took you home.
Kathy hated to admit it, but she was actually glad to see him. Even though their acquaintance had been brief, he was one less stranger to deal with.
Of course it's okay and much appreciated, she said.
I'm parked nearby. Give me a couple of minutes and I'll pull up to the entrance.
The orderly pushed Kathy to the door as Duke left at a lope.
We'll wait inside until he arrives, he said.
Kathy heard but didn't comment. She was watching Duke Talbot run across the parking lot, wondering how old he was and guessing maybe late 30s, early 40s, but then she decided it didn't matter. She wasn't looking, and if he wasn't already married, it was likely he had someone special in his life. Unless he was a complete jerk, anyone that good-looking would surely not be alone. Within a couple of minutes, he was at the entrance. He had the door open and waiting when the orderly wheeled her out. But when she tried to stand up, he just picked her back up, as he'd done when she fell, and had her situated in the front seat of the truck and buckled in before she could brace herself for the impact of his touch. Duke was rarely uncertain what to do, but today was an exception. He already knew she was leery of men. He didn't know why or who had hurt her, but he didn't want his name on that list. He got in, then glanced at her.
Can I assume the fact that your ankle is wrapped instead of in a cast means it's a bad sprain and not a break?
You may, she said, and then grinned.
The rest of me is okay, too, minus a little skin. Kind of embarrassing, actually, since I hiked halfway across the country without so much as a stumble.
Duke blinked.
You hiked?
Then he stopped and took a breath.
By yourself?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?